You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It is so very nearly the year 2016, and welcome back into the Minor League Baseball offices for the 39th edition of the Show Before the Show podcast. I'm Tyler Mon. Sam Dykstra is to my left. We're going to break down the fourth wall and tell you that we just finished recording the American League edition of this podcast, and it's like 10 minutes later, but we both have coffee now. So if you just listen to it, then it's just like one big extended edition of Sam and I sitting here. Yeah. If you are listening to this a week later, welcome back.
Yeah, hopefully this one's a little peppier now that we do have a little refreshment with us. And happy New Year's week to everybody.
Yeah.
Hope, since you are listening in the future, hope your Christmas was good, hope your holidays were good, your Festivus feats of strength didn't last too long.
Got a lot of problems with you people. So, we did the American League last week. National League is on the docket for this week. And again, if you missed last week's episode, you can go back and find it, and we will run through all of the American League wish lists and resolutions and what have you for 2016. But basically, what we're doing for these year-end editions of the show, picking out the biggest storylines as they will affect both the minor league systems and the major league success of all 30 major league organizations heading into 2016. So we did the American League last week. We're going to start in the East with the National League and with one of now the most loaded systems in all of baseball, the Atlanta Braves, which is a system that we've talked about a lot in recent weeks. Obviously, the Shelby Miller deal sort of forced that, but man, this system is so loaded. 17 prospects in this system were acquired from outside the organization. Yeah. That's a rebuild.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I have marked down for their wish list is I think a year from this date, I think the Braves want to look as promising as they do now. They right now, they have all these fresh new toys, all these things can dream on. I shouldn't say things. Players, people that they can dream on. All these possibilities. We've talked at length before on the podcast, on the site, all over the place, how we really like what they're doing right now in terms of building up a system. So what they would love to do is kind of follow the Cubs model. I mean, last year we talked about the Cubs in this similar way, and that there was so much to dream on, and everything clicked, and everything went right. And the Braves aren't going to be the Cubs next year, and that it's not going to all culminate in the majors. They don't have the major league pieces right now to make that happen. But they would love to be, you know, us to talk about them in the same breath that we're talking about them now, in that they have a very promising future. They have many prospects who, at this time next year, hopefully will be knocking down the door right at the cusp. Hopefully Sean Newcomb turns out well. Aaron Blair turns out well. Tyrell Jenkins continues to improve. Manny Benuelos is a major leaguer. Tuki Toussaint is even more promising than he is now, and he certainly has room to grow there. And Dansby Swanson continues to be an exciting prospect. I think these are all things that can continue to happen. They just, if that happens to the Braves, it'll be another successful year of a rebuild.
This system is ridiculous.
Yeah, I know.
Mean,
I
like,
know.
You look at these rankings, like Chris Ellis is the number 11 prospect in this organization. He was the second best pitching prospect in the Angels system when he was dealt. And now all of a sudden he's like, I mean, he's still a very, very high ceiling, very good prospect, but he's in a pack of prospects now. That's how good this organization is.
Yeah, and they're trying to win by numbers in that kind of way. Is that just get a bunch of people like Chris Ellis, or even better, you know, with Newcomb and
Who's the guy you're most excited for in this group?
Oh, man. I mean, I love Dansby.
Yeah.
Just as a player, as a person, makeup, the whole thing. I think he's somebody who's very, very exciting. You know, we talked before about how the trade of Andrelton Simmons kind of cleared up a spot for Ozzie Albies to be their future shortstop. Now I still think it's going to be Dansby Swanson.
Okay.
And that's exciting. I think he can really stick there. I think his bat will play well. He'll be a great star in the majors if he can make it there, and people will love him. So he might be the person I'm rooting for most in terms of just success. And it just his ceiling is so much higher than anybody else in that system. But they, as we talked last week being 10 minutes ago, about the Mariners making all these small tweaks, I think there's a lot of guys that they can just squeeze a lot out of.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron Blair isn't going to be a one or two guy, but he can be a number three or four guy. Sean Newcomb's not going to be necessarily an ace, but he can be a three or four guy. And we're looking at a lot of major league teams now that are willing to pay through the nose for three or four guys, for three or four pitchers, I mean. So they certainly have those pieces.
Tuki Toussaint still stands out to me as one of the guys, not just in that system, but in all of baseball, that I'm excited to see what he has going forward, because the entire talent package is there. And we've gotten the impression that he's pretty fired up by that trade. Being taken by the Diamondbacks, looking like he was going to be somebody they were really going to try to build around, then all of a sudden being dealt away seems like it really lit a fire under him. I don't know what it is about Tukey, but it feels like he has huge things ahead of him. So still really young. We'll see him. More than likely, he's going to make the climb to Class A advance this year. We'll see some time in the Carolina League, you know, barring anything really unexpected, and could see some time in Double A with Mississippi. But young with all the talent in the world, he's one who I'm really excited to watch this year because all of that craziness of being dealt, getting adjusted to a new organization, all that stuff is behind him going into 2016. The Miami Marlins, Sam, are an organization that is perplexing in a lot of ways at the major league level. We know that. That's always been the case. This offseason has been no exception with the Jose Fernandez trade rumors. But at the minor league level, there are guys who really high ceilings, a lot of question marks. This system right now in this division looks comparatively weak just because there's so many other really, really loaded systems. 2016 seems like, again, despite being very young, they've really got to see something out of Tyler Kolek.
Sure, yeah.
Because this year did not – I talked to somebody in the Greensboro front office this summer – who said they started to refer to Tyler Kolek kind of internally in-house as 4x4 because it was always four runs by the fourth inning. That's how it felt for Tyler Kolek. And he's a guy who, you know, the 80-grade fastball revs it into the low hundreds with regularity, but has not been that impressive as a professional yet.
Yeah, but he's still young. I mean, he's still only 20. Yeah, he just turned 20, yeah. So happy belated birthday to Tyler Kolek. Turned 20 on December 15th. But right, he's got that exciting fastball that everybody loves to watch and just can blow it past guys. But, you know, at the South Atlantic League, a 4.56 ERA isn't exactly screaming out to anybody that this is somebody who you can trust going forward. It's not worrisome for me yet. That's just his first overall season. What's more worrisome for me is somebody who has that incredible fastball is his low strikeout numbers.
Yes.
Only 81 in 108 and two-thirds innings. I mean, I say only with, you know, if somebody did that in the majors, we'd say that's okay.
Right.
But for somebody with that kind of fastball pitching against Class A hitters who have likely never seen anything like that before in their lives, you would like to see that number significantly higher. So they just want to see something they can dream on with him outside the fastball, whether that's improving his control of his other pitches, making his change up a little better, just being something that people have to respect the fastball with, or at least respect the changeup. So there's lots that they would like to see out of him. I'll throw out another person from that system. Their first-round pick this year was Josh Naylor. He's one of those guys, only has the body type to be a first baseman,
yeah.
6 foot, 225 pounds. But he certainly has the power. As a high school bat, he's somebody that they can dream on. He's already a top-10 first-base prospect, which is always kind of a shallow pool of players because that means they can't really play anywhere else other than first base. But with him, I would love to see what happens to him once he gets a hold of some, you know, full season ball and how many homers he can finish 2016 with.
That pick confused a lot of people when it came down, but the Marlins were extremely high on Josh Naylor. He was not ranked that highly on, I think, probably most or any team's draft boards, but they wanted left-handed power so badly that they reached to get him with the 12th overall pick. That is, you don't want to put pressure on a kid because of where a team selected him, but it seems like to have gone that high, you would love to see a pretty forceful statement into professional ball. I mean, he did it this year. You see him in the GCL with a really good season, but it's the GCL. It's your first taste of pro ball. When he gets in a full season ball, you hope for Josh Naylor's sake that he does have kind of that breakout year that makes you say, okay, maybe the Marlins were in on something that nobody else saw.
They would love to see him turn into a Bobby Bradley type season.
Yes.
Different area. He'll be in the South Atlantic League over the Midwest League. But if he had something like Bobby Bradley had this year in the Midwest League for the Indians, the Marlins would love that.
It's weird to look at the New York Mets system and not see 1,000 pitchers lining the top 10 in that organization.
They're already there.
Because they're already there. Everybody's already made it to the big leagues, and everybody is already making a huge impact. And the guy who is number one in that organization going into 2016 is a guy who is not going to be in the minor leagues for long, and that's Steven Matz. Behind Steven Matz, we talked with Brandon Nimmo on the podcast. not an uncertain future for Brandon Nimmo, but I think some more question marks for what the Mets are going to do in the outfield going forward than maybe what we had thought 2 years ago with Brandon Nimmo. Now, Michael Kadire retires. That opens up kind of a shift in the way that that could be structured going into 2016. But Nimmo is going to be a fun guy to follow. There's so many guys in this system that feel like they're on the verge of breaking out. One of the guys who I love is Dominic Smith, because I talked with this is like the third time I've done this. I haven't cheated, but I've looked over and you've had the same guy pulled up that I've been.
It just means we've been doing this podcast for long enough.
We're like,
we know.
This is old hat now.
Yeah, we did not share notes before this, so you're all hearing this live.
We're actually just an old married couple, Sam and I. We're just two 79-year-olds. But Dom Smith, the thing I love about Dom Smith, I talked to three or four different guys in the Arizona Fall League who told me how much they love talking hitting or talking defensive work or just talking about baseball with Dom Smith. Those guys, those really gravitational type of guys, seem to always find their way to success. And from what it sounds like, his work ethic parallels that. So Dom Smith really feels like a guy who's not necessarily under the radar. He's the number five prospect in the system, but is somebody to keep an eye on that maybe you haven't heard of to this point.
Yeah, and he was a guy who really struggled this year in the FSL, and I remember talking to him, and he said, you know, listen, I have a low average right now because balls are just not falling in. They will fall in and things will be fine. And then you look at his BABIP numbers, and they were just so much in the lower 200s. You understood that he knew everything was okay. He's got a calm approach. Has not yet shown really the power that anybody would think out of a first base prospect like him. Had six homers this year in St. Lucie, and even that was higher than years prior. So I think what they would love out of him is just to see that power pop a little bit when he moves to AA. You know, played a little bit in the AFL this year. Was a standout there, you know, performed well there. You know, had a lot of people's eyes on him, and a lot of good things were said, as you were saying. So next year he'll turn 21 in June, and I think he's that guy. He can just hit for a lot of average, can be that type of first baseman who necessarily won't provide 30 homers as he matures, but can be a 20-homer guy perhaps, and then with a 300 average, if that ends up being his ceiling and he meets it, that's going to be a very exciting person who's not a pitcher for the Mets. That I think that's how we kind of predict their future is based on their pitching. But if they can get somebody like him,
he's exciting and not a pitcher.
And not a
pitcher. That's how you have to frame it in the
Mets
system.
Yeah. So if they can have somebody other than a pitcher that'll get everybody excited. You know, we saw that a little bit with Conforto this year. Maybe it'll be Nimmo next year. But I think Dom Smith is that guy going forward.
My favorite thing in the Mets organization is their number 16 and 17 prospects back to back, just strictly based on name alone, and that's Robert Selman and Thomas Zupucki, because the two of them juxtaposed right next to each other in the rankings. Robert's last name is G-S-E-L-L-M-A-N, and Thomas's last name is S-Z-A-P-U-C-K-I. That's just my favorite thing because there's silent consonants.
We all have our quirks, man.
Obviously. We talked this topic 2 weeks ago, I think now. The rebuild project currently underway, which one is better, the Atlanta Braves or the Philadelphia Phillies? And how we headed into that conversation was a year ago. We never thought we'd be having that conversation.
Yeah.
But the Braves, we talked about how loaded they are. All of a sudden, the Phillies feel that exact same way. The Mark Appel edition feels like that's going to be a big key to 2016 for them. Can he finally make that last step? It's interesting because he's going to go from a hitter's haven in the PCL. Fresno is not necessarily the best hitter's ballpark in the PCL, but not an easy place to pitch, as the Pacific Coast League often is. Nowhere is an easy place to pitch, it feels like. So if he sticks in AAA, Lehigh Valley will be a bit better situation for being a guy who has struggled at times in hitter's parks. But now if he graduates to the major leagues, you're going to a hitter's haven in Philadelphia. So what are we going to see from Mark Appel?
I think they just want him to be in a place where he can hit the majors.
Yeah.
You know, we saw the Astros kind of aggressively push him, even though he had some struggles, because they thought he still had the stuff and that he could handle it. You remember there was that controversy that they allowed him to throw a bullpen
between
Lancaster and Corpus Christi, and everybody was like, why are they doing this? He's not been good in the Cal League. So if he can just establish himself in the Philly system at Lehigh Valley, show that he is ready for the majors this year, I think that alone would be a win. But I think that's true of a lot of what they have. I think what they want at the end of this year is to say that Mark Appel, J.P. Crawford even, Jake Thompson, Nick Williams, Jorge Alfaro, you know, four of those top five guys were all acquired in recent months. But if two or three of them are real solid major leaguers by the end of this year, that'll be some cornerstones that they can add to Aaron Nola, Michael Franco, and Odubel Herrera. And that's how you build a solid team. They do not have a solid team right now, but if at the end of the year some of these prospects can just get that taste of the majors, I think that'll be a win for Philly.
The thing that I love about Philly is even though that is the headlining trade of the last few weeks, when you look back on some of these other trades they made, and we've talked about the trade they made with the Texas Rangers, but Nick Williams and Jorge Alfaro at 4-5 in the system, you kind of forget about some of the other guys who they've acquired, like Zach Eflin, who they brought over from the San Diego Padres, mm-hmm. was a very, very high ceiling. Ben Lively, who they brought over from the Cincinnati Reds, a guy was pretty highly ranked in that system. Lively this year didn't necessarily blow the doors off with Reading in the AA Eastern League, but made 25 starts, pitched pretty consistently throughout the season. One of the guys who I really, really like is Thomas Eshelman. Eshelman came out of Cal State Fullerton and throws strikes. You can say a guy is a strike thrower, and then there are guys like Thomas Eshelman who are just absurd. He led Division I in walks per nine innings as a freshman, a sophomore, and a junior, and threw more strikes in 3 years than any pitcher in college history. So there's strike throwers, and then there's guys like that. That's the type of thing that can carry you pretty quickly to the big leagues.
Yeah, the one thing about Eshelman is that he did also come over in that Appel trade. They got him from the Astros. So that's somebody that you know that will be a little lower in the system. We've talked before about how much I love Joe Musgrove for his ability to throw strikes, and I think that's something that really makes you zoom up levels, is that if you are not giving up free passes. So Eshelman, as an addition to that system, will be huge. Alberto Tirado, a guy they got from the Blue Jays too, you could go up and down just the arms they brought in. You know, not necessarily number one type guys, but are guys that are going to be for depth, and it's certainly going to be an exciting year for the Phillies.
Washington Nationals, the top prospects in that system are as exciting as any other organization's top prospects. Mm-hmm. Lucas Giolito is the best pitching prospect in baseball by basically anybody's measure. And Trey Turner came over. We'll have the Nationals organization all-star story as you are listening to this is up now at MILB.com. I'm putting that one together right now as we speak. It's such weird time travel with a podcast. But Trey Turner, hearing the way that people in that system talk about Trey Turner, the way he responded to the trade, not really suffering from having to play a lame duck first half of the season in the Padres system and then get traded over and didn't try to do too much, didn't press and, you know, freak out, I have to make a good impression, makes it to the major leagues in his third month in the organization. I mean, those guys are as good as anybody. But the thing that was really impressive about the Nationals is it felt like all of the top talents in that system had good years, which you can't say for every organization. That seems almost intuitive, but it doesn't feel like any of these guys took a step back this year.
Yeah, the only one who I'd say maybe took slightly a step back was AJ Cole.
Yes.
In that he was good at AAA, but didn't quite stick at the majors, didn't quite have the strikeout numbers you'd want out of him. He's still a good prospect. I mean, having 3.15 ERA is good. And he just goes from being maybe a mid-rotation type to your 5-6 starter type. So if anybody would like to have him in their system, what Nationals have him. Didn't have the best of best years that's going to send him screaming up these charts, but he did get passed by guys who had very good years. Wilmer Defoe, another one. So when we talk a lot about these wish lists for teams, I think a lot of teams would like to have similar years to what the Nationals have. My personal dream this year for the Nationals is to get Lucas Giolito in the majors, have everybody else see what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
I think he got an invite to Major League Spring Training this year.
He did.
So those stories will start in February and March, and can you believe the Giolito kid? The legend of him will grow a little bit. Whether it's going to be the legend or the reality will be a different story, but I would love to see him be a September call-up, if not earlier.
Another guy I really like in that system is Spencer Keboom. He took a little bit of a step back this year offensively, but defensively, that was his calling card. Coming out of Clemson, everybody knew he was going to be a defensive catcher. Throughout, I think, 44% of base stealers this year. He's really impressive, and the thing the Nationals really like about him, they drafted him, knew he was going to miss a season with Tommy John surgery. But as a catcher, I think sometimes that almost serves cerebral catchers better because you get to just observe for a while, which catchers need to do and like to do. So Spencer Keboom, even though this year in the Carolina League, not a huge season offensively, seems like he has the makings of a guy who could be an everyday catcher at the big leagues. They're really high on Jackson Reitz, who's a little bit higher ranked but lower in the system than him. But Washington, you know, no slouch in that system in a division that is full of really good systems. Let's go to the Central and kind of the National League's version of the Astros. The Chicago Cubs have put together, over the last three, 4 years, one of the deepest and best systems in all of baseball. They've done it almost strictly on position players, but it seems like that's starting to level out now. There is some really good pitching talent. C.J. Edwards, Carl Edwards Jr., a guy who fits in at the major league level as a reliever. He has started at times throughout his professional career, but a really, really exciting arm. Dwayne Underwood is a younger guy, but Pierce Johnson had a good year this year. So it seems like some of that pitching is starting to catch up, but it's still – position players have come so fast and so furious for the Cubs over the last few years.
Yeah, and I think the thing – I'm going to kind of stick with those position players, and I think the biggest hole the Cubs might have is that catcher. And I would love for Wilson Contreras to kind of become a household name on that team. You know, not necessarily be a driving force for them, but the year he had this year was just such a breakout year. Hit .333 in Double A, 8 homers, 4 triples, 34 doubles. He's become a household name in prospect file circles, you know, in our circles. But I would love to see him crack the majors and be the offensive, tool, the offensive guru that he was in Tennessee this year at the major league level. I think he certainly worked his way into that conversation, and if he could do that and become a very good young catcher for them, that's just another piece in that, you know, puzzle for them that is already making them World Series contenders. You know, they've added Jason Hayward this offseason. It would fill another hole for what is, you know, a team that I think is the team to watch in baseball in 2016.
I also want to give a shout-out to 2015 Cubs Minor League Pitcher of the Year, Ryan Williams, number 30-ranked prospect in the organization, just because he looks exactly like former Show Before the Show co-host Jake Seiner. Rest in peace, Jake. Cincinnati Reds, who had a very strange week this week. Brandon Phillips tweets out, this is now 2 weeks ago, if you're listening before the New Year's holiday, tweets out the area code Cincinnati to Washington, D.C., was saying that he had landed in D.C. He was all set to go to the Nationals. And then, as it appeared, according to reports, didn't waive his no-trade clause. That whole deal fell through. The Nationals moved on. So it's been a weird week at the major league level for the Reds. But what the Reds have done is they've brought in some pieces this offseason, obviously, with the trade. Jose Peraza comes over. He's installed now as the number one prospect in that organization. But they seem to be an organization that has struggled to graduate a lot of big impact talent. I mean, we know Robert Stevenson has put some really good minor league seasons together, hasn't quite broken through yet. Jesse Winker has had some really, really exciting stretches, had a really good year this year for Pensacola. There are some question marks as to where and how he's going to continue to develop when he goes to Louisville next year. The Peraza trade I know you really like, but this system, that division is so absurd right now. Is this system good enough to get Cincinnati back into that conversation?
Not by its own merit. I think what they would love to have happen is that they can move Brandon Phillips, if not to the Nationals, to somebody else, and then have the rest of the world fall in love with Jose Peraza the way they apparently have.
And again, maybe that's happened by the time you're listening to this. We wanted to install that kind of as a precursor to this episode.
Yeah.
We're recording this, like we said, a little bit before Christmas, so it's entirely possible the landscape has changed a bit. But yeah, the Peraza deal didn't seem to make sense unless you're planning on moving Phillips
up. Yeah, definitely. They're not going to put him on the bench the amount of money they're going to be paying him. But you also don't want to have Jose Peraza, you don't want to trade for him and make him that major piece and have him stashed away on the bench or in AAA again after a trade the way the Dodgers did with him. So I think they would love for him to just work his way into that lineup, be a 300 hitter for them, steal a bunch of bases, become, you know, one of the best stolen base duos in baseball between him and Billy Hamilton, have a better on-base percentage than Hamilton, and kind of steal some headlines away from him and what's been kind of a disappointing offensive start to Hamilton's career. So they would love for that trade to look justified by the end of the year. I think a lot of people are down on what they got back. But if they finish the year and people go like, oh, well, maybe they did get something in this Peraza kid, then they would be pretty happy.
One of the guys who, again, we're kind of picking out, you know, the biggest storylines and then some sleepers in this system. One of the guys I really like is Phil Irvin, who had a really good Arizona Fall League season. Was hampered somewhat this year by wrist surgery that he had last offseason. So didn't put up eye-popping numbers. He spent some time with AA Pensacola this year. Most of it was with Class A Advanced Dayton combined. He had .241 with a .726 OPS. But the athleticism is there, very much there for Phil Irvin. I really, really like that about him. And it just seems like in that division right now, there is virtually no margin for error.
And
that's what's scary. If you're a team that's not the Pirates or the Cubs or the Cardinals, if you are the Brewers, if you are the Reds, you can't afford to have one of those years where, guys just didn't quite put it all together. Everybody has to in order to compete now in the Central.
Yeah, and that's kind of the problem, is that you look at this system the way it's currently built, and there's some exciting pieces, but it's not a world burner of a system. I think Winker could be somebody. I think Stevenson can certainly be somebody, and Peraza can be somebody. After that, we're not talking about something that's going to get you excited, going to topple the Pirates, Cardinals, and Cubs, that triumvirate that seems built to win for years to come.
I am very excited for 2016 in the Milwaukee Brewers organization, selfishly, because there's a chance that their top two prospects, maybe three out of their top four, maybe all their top four, depending on how things go, more than likely not for Trent Clark, since he is extraordinarily young. But they're all going to be 45 minutes away from me. The Colorado Springs Sky Sox should be loaded for next year because of guys like Orlando Arcia, Brett Phillips, Tyrone Taylor is the number four prospect in that system. Arcia, he has everything. People liked him going into 2015. Now it's like, I don't want to call him the poor man's Carlos Correa, but nobody is Carlos Correa. But the way people talk about Orlando Arcia is as good as any shortstop prospect in baseball, especially people in that system. People rave about him.
Yeah, and when I did the Milby story on him as our breakout prospect of the year, just all the good things that came out of him. You ask for stories, and everybody has a story on who he is and just kind of the good kid he is and how much drive he has, and how he's got a little bit of that swagger, which like just a little bit, just a
especially
taste.
That position. I love that from a shortstop.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's funny you say he's not the poor man's Correa, but I think what they would be over the roof happy with this year if he's this year's version of Francisco Lindor.
Yes, that's probably a better comparison.
Yeah, very very good defensive shortstop, and by all reports, the amount of people, he won a Gold Glove this year, a minor league Gold Glove this year. And all the reports you hear about him is that he could win a Major League Gold Glove if he's not muscled out by all these other young shortstops. So he's definitely got it with the glove, with the arm there. But if he can do the type of season that Lindor had, that surprised a little bit at the plate, a 300 hitter when nobody expected that out of him. If he can be that guy, after getting up a call up in June or July, and they're going to be ready for him. Gene Segura, we used to think was the future of the shortstop position in Milwaukee, doesn't look that way anymore. Nothing more than an average player.
Yeah.
So the seat is for the taking for Orlando Arcia. If he can be this year's version of Lindor, Brewers will be happy, and that'll be a big cog in their own rebuild.
We have massive man crushes on Brett Phillips here that we are totally unashamed to admit. But Brett Phillips is a guy...
Friend of the podcast.
Very good friend of the podcast, who is similar, I think, to Arcia in certain ways, in that he flew somewhat under the radar until a breakout season in 2014. And the thing that was so crazy for Phillips was... And this is funny, because when we were in Taiwan, one of the guys who did color analysis on one of our broadcasts of a Team USA game, the first question that Brett Phillips got, even in Taiwan, was, you didn't homer at all your first two professional seasons, then you had 17 homers in 2013. How did that happen? And that's what one of my very first conversations with Brett Phillips, that was a question that I asked him when he was in the middle of that breakout season, was, where did all this power come from? That's taken his game to kind of an entirely different level. Already a very promising prospect, but got more flexible, tweaked his stance a little bit, tapped into that power. Now it seems like he's gone from a 1-2 hitter in the order to a 3-4-5-6 hitter in the order. He actually batted ninth a lot for Team USA in that Premier 12 tournament. Willie Randolph liked what he provided with some pop and speed at the bottom of a lineup. But I think he slots more in the middle of a lineup and now is in a system where he is one of the guys. He's not just a guy as he was in Houston. Yeah. Now he's the number two prospect in that system.
Yeah, and I definitely think they kind of misused him as a number nine hitter. So I think going forward, that's not exactly what to expect out of him either. But yeah, for sure. And he's a guy who just in the conversations we've had with him, you've had with him personally, he's a guy who's going to take that opportunity and certainly run with it and acknowledge what an opportunity that is.
Pittsburgh Pirates. This 3-4 years ago, you would not have expected to talk about the Pirates as one of the best run organizations top to bottom in baseball. They have turned themselves into that. I shouldn't say 3 or 4 years ago. Maybe 5 and beyond years
ago. Yeah, I was going to say 10 years ago.
But this organization now is as good as any in baseball, and it feels as if the tandem coming up of Tyler Glasnow and Jameson Taillon is the next frontier for the Pirates. You've already got so much good young pitching talent there. Garrett Cole obviously spearheads that. But to have those two guys now ready, Taillon being healthy, Tyler Glasnow having another good season under his belt, those two guys if they can graduate together, that's so scary to add two pitchers of that talent level to an already really, really good staff.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned Cole because, I mean, obviously that's where pitching starts and begins with, or starts and ends with the Pirates. You know, that's where you have to talk about their ace pitcher is Gerrit Cole. But what they would love to do with either Tyone or Glasnow or both is have either of them become the next Cole in that they – you know, they waited out. Everybody's like, when are you bringing this guy up? I think that's more likely with Glasnow because there's too many, you know, injury worries for Tyone coming off the Tommy John. But if either one of those, you know, if the people are crying out for these prospects to come up in an already very, very good team, Pirates will be happy. I think Glasnow could be that guy in that the Zips projections done by Fangraphs had him as – if he played the entire year for the Pirates this year and he's a young guy, would be their fourth best pitcher, which is pretty good. That's something to dream on. At 22 years old, yeah. And we talk about his size being 6'8", and his fastball and his curveball, and it just throws minor leaguers for loops over and over again.
Also, one of the few guys who is described as gangly in his MLB pipeline scouting report.
Yeah, and I don't think he probably likes being gangly. Yeah. I mean, you watch him pitch, he's very angular. You know, he uses his arms a lot, but uses his legs. He's got long legs. It's all there. Got some time in Indianapolis last year in the AAA level. So they would love for him to be banging down the door and making people cry for him to call him up and just having him sit there until he's absolutely cooked and ready.
Josh Bell, good season this year. Austin Meadows, good season this year. He was healthy, which I think was the biggest thing for him. Reese McGuire, friend of the podcast, good season this year. Not, I think, massive breakout campaigns, but just solid incremental steps forward. Alan Hansen, another guy we've talked about for a while in that system. Again, it's similar to what we talked about with the Nationals. If you can get an entire system full of guys with very few steps back, that means you're doing a lot right on the player development side.
Yeah, and with Bell in particular, you know, kind of similar to the way we talked about the Astros and that there is a hole right now at first base. It's just kind of a placeholder there in Michael Morse. I don't think anybody in the Pirates is exactly excited about having him as, or, you know, going to be writing home about Michael Morse as your starting first baseman on opening day.
Yeah.
So if Josh Bell can kind of figure out the defensive issues he's had there, he only just moved there. He used to be an outfielder. Obviously, their outfield is a little too crowded for Josh Bell as things stand. So if he can kind of force his way with a really strong start to the year, both offensively and defensively in Indianapolis, that'll be even better for the Pirates.
The third head of the three-headed monster in the National League Central over the last few seasons is the St. Louis Cardinals, and that, again, a team that seems like they never go through a period of rebuilding. They just reload with talent. They go into 2016 with the biggest question mark in Alex Reyes because he's going to be coming off a drug suspension. We know it was marijuana. He came out, he apologized immediately and admitted to it. I don't think it'll affect him in terms of the substance itself. I think what affects him is going to be that's a lot of innings you miss to start a season.
Right.
So how does that then, when he gets back June, whenever it is, how does that affect Alex Reyes? Is he going to come back and try to do a little bit too much to make up for that lost time? What's the mentality going to be for him trying to close out 2016 on a good note?
Honestly, I hadn't thought about it that way. And like, how is he going to come back from it? Because I'm not too worried about him throwing innings to the side
right.
and doing that kind of thing. It's obviously different in game action. But what I think that could potentially mean is he's going to be coming into it fresh and that there isn't going to be the innings limit
that
it necessarily would be before.
Look at you, the optimist.
Oh, well, yeah. I don't want to say it's the exciting bit of it, but it's just, you know, it's in terms of a suspension of this nature. But in him coming back and just not having to worry about we have to limit you to 5 innings today, we have to limit you to 6 innings, just letting him go out there, be the pitcher that he has been. And more innings means more in strikeouts for us, which are just pretty box scores, which will be good. What will be interesting for him is the Cardinals are obviously going to contend next year. To say anything else, it just would look foolish at this point. So what I would love for them to do is to bring him up in September and use him as a reliever. Maybe, you know, maybe they decide he isn't a good number 5 starter for them out of the gate this year, or not out of the gate, but at the end of the season. But kind of a Carlos Martinez situation. Obviously, he's a bigger guy. He's a more sturdy guy. They wouldn't have to worry about his arm falling off in the way a lot of people were worried about with Martinez. But him in a bullpen situation on a major league level, just the way he would light up a gun in short spurts like that would be so exciting for me to watch, for anybody at home to watch, and certainly for Cardinals fans to watch.
The number two prospect in that system is Jack Flaherty, by the way, a right-hander who was taken with the 34th overall pick in 2014. And I just want to point out that Jack Flaherty went to Harvard-Westlake High School in California and was therefore a high school teammate of Lucas Giolito.
Yeah.
How do schools do that? How is that possible? Could you imagine? And they're 2 years difference in school, so I'm not sure if they pitched in the same rotation, but could you imagine that?
Well, one thing, too, is that once you have a good alumnus, as you do with Giolito, people keep coming back.
Everybody wants to go.
Yeah, so that's kind of worked out, too, with Brady Aiken this year. You know, was pitching at IMG Academy, and then I know the Red Sox drafted Logan Allen out of that same system because he got that exposure. So, you know, sometimes rising tides lift all ships, I guess, and Flaherty's kind of – I don't know if he would have gotten the same exposure as he did if Giolito hadn't pitched there 2 years earlier.
National League West, one of the most head-scratching systems in all of baseball, is first up in that division, the Arizona Diamondbacks, because that system looks so much thinner now. The Major League roster obviously looks a lot better due in large part to that, but man, there are some big question marks that have come out of those deals over the last couple of years for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Tuki Toussaint is gone. Obviously, a whole lot of pieces gone in that Shelby Miller trade with Dansby Swanson and Aaron Blair being the headliners, two of the three guys traded along with Major League outfielder Ender Inciarte. But right now, I talked with a scout recently who said there's a growing thought in the community right now of people who evaluate player development departments that Dave Stewart's in over his head because he's sacrificing long-term talent in these very odd deals. The Tuki Toussaint trade, packaging him with Bronson Arroyo, was one of the weirdest deals anybody could have conceived of. And then the Shelby Miller deal came along, and that was almost even weirder.
Yeah.
Right now, I mean, there are still guys in that system who you get excited about. Archie Bradley had a really scary injury this year, was hitting the head with a line drive during a start at the Major League level for the Diamondbacks. But Braden Shipley had a good year. Yoan Lopez is behind them, a projectable guy. Did not have a whole lot of success in Double-A this year. The top four prospects in that system right now are pitchers. But behind them, and even including them, I think, to a certain extent, there's a ton of question marks now, and there doesn't seem to be elite-level talent the way that there was 6 months ago in that system where it was ripe with it.
Yeah, and even Archie Bradley, I mean, you know, injury aside, used to be a very, very, very exciting prospect, and now it's just filled with question marks because of control issues and, you know, the way he's been able to been hit around the park a little bit in the majors so far. So I think they want something out of him, something that they can dream on. And I guess when you kind of, the way you start this, talking about how the way Dave Stewart kind of operates, probably the best scenario for the Diamondbacks is that they develop these guys into assets that they trade again at the deadline.
Yeah.
You know, that's the modus operandi for them, is that they are just, they want these guys to become pieces that other teams really covet. Not necessarily teams that they're players that are going to fill holes for them. And you just have to kind of call it the way you see it, and that's the way it looks right now, is that minor league players for the D-backs are pieces. They are not future pieces. They are pieces in which to get other major league pieces. So I'll just kind of highlight this because I had it written down, is that something they probably want to see is some defensive continuity for Peter O'Brien.
Yeah.
You know, there's all those question marks. He wants to be a catcher. They want him in the outfield. He's got the bat to be in it in the outfield, but he's got better value as a catcher, maybe – his game calling isn't too good as a catcher. Now they're talking about putting him back there again. They would love to see him grab hold of one of those positions. We would all love to see him grab hold of one of those positions. So that's a big question mark for me going forward. But yeah, we'll see. Have to see how this system develops in 2016.
He definitely is one of the guys who I think stands out as one of the most interesting ones to follow, but is very much a kind of a microcosm of that system right now, because while he is exciting and interesting, he also comes with a whole ton of question marks, and you can say that about the entire Diamondback system at this rate. The Colorado Rockies started what appeared to be a rebuild in July when they traded Troy Tulowitzki to the Toronto Blue Jays and brought back a trio of pitching prospects. Since then, it hasn't been the full blow-up that I think people really maybe thought was coming after the Tulowitzki trade. They haven't traded Carlos Gonzalez yet. They haven't made any of those other huge moves. But right now, a lot of really good top-level talent there. John Gray highlights the pitching prospects, made his major league debut at the end of the season, but now you have guys to back him up. Jeff Hoffman's the number four prospect in the system acquired from the Blue Jays. Kyle Freeland came back and was very, very good as he finished his season out and then was outstanding in the Arizona Fall League. So they have always the name of the game in Colorado. You need pitching depth. It seems like they have it. They also acquired Miguel Castro, who's the number 10 prospect in the system. Castro pitched out of the bullpen in the majors at the end of the year. And Jesus Tinoco, who was kind of the throw-in in that Tulowitzki deal, was dominant for Class A Asheville, went 5-0 with a 1.80 ERA in 7 starts. So they finally have numbers. The Rockies, it seems like, have always struggled to get anybody from the system to be an effective major league starter. It seems like they have numbers now, at least in of, okay, you have 6 prospects, maybe one or two of these guys pan out. They haven't really had that in the past.
Yeah, and that's the thing with the Rockies is that they always have to develop pitching if they're going to have pitching, because guys aren't going to sign there. They're not going to willingly go to Coors Field and say, watch my ERA blow up. And because the way contracts work, you know, you can try to pump up ERA plus and talk about stadium factors, but that's when they have their financial futures to worry about. They're not going to willingly go to a offensive park like that, at least not for lots and lots more money than other teams would be offering. The thing for me, I think, in that system is just seeing how Ryan McMahon kind of performs outside the Cal League.
Yeah.
Had really, really good numbers in Modesto. Not a high desert, not Lancaster by any means, but the amount of doubles this year, 43, is that going to turn into homers as he kind of matures? He had 18 homers this year. So could that number even go up once he leaves and goes to the Texas League next year? Because if that's the case, then he becomes a very, very interesting prospect, not just a top 100 guy. We're talking about even more than that. So he could be a very interesting piece for them going forward. They already have a third baseman, Nolan Arenado, who seems to be the guy they're going to cling to for years to come. But I think what you started out with saying is exactly correct. They're going to have to develop pitching, and now at least they have the numbers. If it's just a roll-of-the-dice game, then at least one or two of these guys is going to hit and become a major league starter for them.
I'm really interested to see the way that Brendan Rodgers and Mike Nikorak, the Rockies' top 2 picks in the 2015 draft, rebound from somewhat tough professional debuts. Brendan Rodgers really broke down physically. He only played in 37 games, and I don't think it's because of any sort of brittleness with him as a player. I think it's because season finished relatively early in Florida. I talked to him shortly after he was drafted. They had a press conference at Coors Field, and he said, all I've been able to do is take grounders and take swings. So it wasn't really game shape when he got into pro ball, so struggled somewhat. Mike Nikorak was really, really problematic this year for class for rookie level Grand Junction. Went 0-4 with an 11.72 ERA, walked 32 batters against 14 strikeouts. So that's something the Rockies are really going to need to see some improvement on going forward. But again, really young guys. The Rockies don't ordinarily go for high school players that early. They did this year, so plenty of time for those guys to develop. We've talked about the Los Angeles Dodgers system a lot because they spend a ton of money at the major league level, but they're still loaded at the minor league level. Parted with some prospects in the deal that sent, well, the three-team trade. They sent, obviously, Jose Peraza. He was the big one that they sent to the Cincinnati Reds, but Scott Schebler also included that deal, a ranked prospect. But the top-level guys in that system got better somehow this week because they added Frankie Montas from the Chicago White Sox. So still loaded. I mean, that the Dodgers, it's not often that you can spend that amount of money at the major league level and have a system as good as their system is.
Yeah, and I'm glad you started out that way, because what I wrote down for their goal for this year is to not overpay for the big trade that feels like it's coming.
Yeah.
Jose Fernandez is what everybody likes to talk about, but then Jake Odorizzi's name was thrown out there as well as somebody the Dodgers are going after. And those are all young, controllable pitchers who are good, and that they're going to cost not just a pretty penny, but several nickels. And the Dodgers certainly line up with a lot of these teams. You mentioned them. You know, Seager, I think, is off limits. Urias, maybe they'd entertain it, but it'd have to be for something really
right,
good back.
Something huge.
Yeah. Jose De Leon, those are what's called the big three in the Dodgers system right now. So anything they would trade for that would have to bring back something really, really good. And that's the type of trades they're talking about right now. I think the Red Sox overpaid a little bit when they gave up 2 top 100 guys in Javier Guerra and Manuel Margot. So I think the Dodgers should try to learn from that a little bit, and that they have the depth, but they shouldn't have to pay extra just because they have that depth. A lot of people know their system well now, and they're going to be asking for everything they can squeeze out of this very good system. So I think they have, you know, a good front office that knows what they have and knows the assets that they could give away. But as long as they don't overpay and take this from top 3 farm system to a middling farm system in one deal, I think it'll be a success.
I was zoned out a minute ago because I was reading Jose De Leon's background, because his story is so interesting. And this is kind of a good example of what's made the Dodgers so successful. De Leon was a 24th round draft pick back in 2013, and nobody knew about him really until 2014, and then really, really broke out. Julio Urias, I think, is somewhat different. He's an international signee. He's not a draft prospect, but the Dodgers were in on him before anybody was in on him. They've obviously done a really good job historically scouting Mexico, but they hit in a lot of places where other teams haven't. And that has made the Dodgers really successful. And now acquiring somebody like Frankie Montas is absurd.
Yeah.
I mean, that system was already really exciting, gets more exciting. And yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. If you're a Dodgers fan, you really have to hope you're not going to mortgage the future on a short-term acquisition because it feels like you need to at this stage, especially what the Diamondbacks have done this offseason. Giants have made some moves this offseason, and the Dodgers have been pretty quiet. The one big move we thought they were going to make, the Aroldis Chapman trade, fell apart. So yeah, is there a panic button situation in Los Angeles? You certainly hope not if you are a Dodgers fan, because they have so much there. You hope that you don't get yourself into a situation where all of a sudden, oh man, this team looks entirely different from what we thought it was going to be the next few years down the road. You mentioned that trade, Boston Red Sox, San Diego Padres, that sent two top 100 guys to the Padres. This has been such a different feeling offseason in San Diego from what we saw in 2014, December of 2014, when the Padres and AJ Preller were just out wheeling and dealing and collecting and acquiring every single big major league name that they could. This year, they've gone back to really what AJ Preller's roots were, which is amateur talent and finding prospects and being able to develop guys. They acquire two big names in Margot and Guerra from the Red Sox, but there are also still some pretty good pieces in that system that were there and were left over after all of those crazy deals. That's, I think, what it comes down to now. Can the Padres replenish the stuff that they lost in the great experiment of the offseason of 2014?
Yeah, and I think the first step in that is making that Kimbrel trade look really, really good. You know, if Margot can really hit and continue to show really, really plus defense in center field and some impressive wheels, you know, once he hits the ground running, you know, pun intended, in the San Diego system, that would be great. And if Guerra continues to have more power than what we initially expected at the beginning of this 2015 season, if that he carries that power over to the 2016 season, that'll look good. He's a really, really plus defender. Now is not behind anybody as he was in the Red Sox system, that, you know, those lower levels had tons of infield talent. Now he gets to kind of stand out and pop a little bit more in the Padres system. He kind of gets to be a guy. I think if those two guys continue to grow, continue to be top 100 talent and make us look at the end of the 2016 season at like what the Red Sox gave up for essentially 16 innings of a great closer, but it's just 60 innings of
right.
a closer. You know, the Padres will look all the better, especially after all that time of, you know, acquiring big names. Maybe if the biggest names they acquire are prospects, that'll make them look even better. The guy I kind of am going to be looking out for, we mentioned him earlier in the podcast, was Logan Allen, acquired in that same deal. You know, came over from the IMG Academy, which is the same place Brady Aiken was. Has a 60-grade fastball, 50-grade curveball, 50-grade slider, 50-grade changeup. Four really good weapons. You know, grades out some of them to be major league average, but he's still only 18. He'll turn 19 in May. He's a left-handed arm. You know, once he gets that taste of full-season ball with the Padres, I'll be interested to see what he can do once he faces those full-season bats.
It was such a weird juxtaposition these two off seasons in San Diego, because especially in the autopsy of what went wrong in 2015, everybody looked at the system that the Padres had and noticed that was a pretty good system before it all got blown up last offseason. So now that's the big task ahead in San Diego, is trying to see if you can get back to where you were. And I think this offseason certainly shows that AJ Preller and his staff have the ability to do that, but you got to be able to keep it going forward. Finally, our final team, did I miss anybody?
No,
I haven't missed
it.
Anybody in the West.
You have not missed
I only
anybody.
Missed teams, and we edit them out due to radio magic. I only missed teams in the Central Division, apparently. The San Francisco Giants, who will win the World Series next year because it's an even year.
So congratulations.
Congratulations in advance to Giants fans everywhere. This is, I don't want to say it's similar to the Angels system, which we described last week as barren, but the Giants, for being so successful, have not had that rush of really, really good prospects that we've seen from most teams that have been competitive, have been in LCS, have been in World Series. From year to year, it seems like there is some good talent in the system, but it doesn't blow you away in the Giants system.
Yeah, and I mean, part of that is graduating all that talent.
Yeah.
And then you are left with what they have now, which is not much, which is okay. You know, that means they do have to sign Jeff Samardzija to a big deal.
Right.
And that's all right. That's just kind of how that works every now and again. But you're right, it is kind of barren. Some of these guys haven't worked out. Kyle Crick hasn't been exactly what they expected. Christian Arroyo is kind of coming up and doing well. And I think Baseball America had him as the system's top prospect, which is good, but I don't think that would be true of any other several other farm systems. So they have some intriguing pieces, but the one I kind of want to highlight, and we'll just kind of I'll go out on this note anyways, is Lucius Fox. They signed him last year out of the Bahamas. Very intriguing in that he's got a 70 grade run tool. Everybody talks about just how good his speed is. So I would love to see him come in. We'll see where they're going to put him, whether it'll be the lower levels, Arizona League, rookie levels, Salem Kaiser perhaps, or if he'll get a kind of taste of full season ball. But I would just love to see him get tons of stolen bases, just so we can have Batman puns.
I was just going to say,
yeah,
also,
it.
President and CEO of Wayne Enterprises and the Wayne Foundation, I wanted to make sure I got his full title in there. So, Lucius Fox, congratulations on such a diverse career already.
I know, yeah.
And Morgan Freeman gets to play him in the movie.
All right. So
Already has.
So, just
Morgan Freeman takes the field in the Northwest League next summer.
We're podcasters. We're also writers. We're headline makers. We want the Lucius Fox puns, please. Tools already works in there. Lucius is the one who provides.
He's the one who makes all the cool stuff.
Yeah. So, Tools.
Come on.
That just writes itself. Let us write it. We would love nothing more.
One of the guys who I want to spotlight in that system, he'll go into 2016 as the 19th ranked prospect in the organization, but Ray Black. We talked about Tyler Kolek's fastball. He's a starter. Ray Black coming out of the bullpen is as exciting as anybody. He's got an 80 grade fastball, pitched in the Fall Stars game this year in the AFL. Got a chance to see that. Was named to that roster. And his fastball is the stuff that if you're doing something and you're in a ballpark where Ray Black is and you hear that he's coming into the game, drop whatever it is and go watch, because it's that exciting. So he's one to keep kind of in the back of your mind. Again, has not necessarily put up the career path. He's 25, but last year pitched Class A Advanced, a little bit old for that level, but really, really discovered himself. Went 2-1 with a 2.88 ERA, 20 games, but 15 of those were in relief. He kind of found his groove. Struck out 51 in 25 innings. Pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty
good numbers. Yeah. So keep an eye on Ray Black. That's it.
That's it.
Senior circuit. We did it.
That's it for 2015, too.
Unbelievable. How did this happen?
Time. Just okay. Time passes.
Hey, it has been a pleasure, Sam, through 39 episodes now. That's kind of cool. We're going to start 2016 on episode number 40, which will be a lot of fun. But this has been – we've had a whole pile of fun with this throughout the entire
year. Yeah, so thank you for everybody for listening for our
biggest
first year.
Thanks.
And here's to 2016 and more to come, and more interesting interviews and more interesting podcasts and stories and the whole thing. So we're excited for what's to come personally. We're not going to break down what we expect ourselves and resolutions and stuff like that. You can tweet us and talk to us there. But, yeah, we're excited about what's coming.
Congratulations to all of you for making it through a full season of listening to us, and our biggest thanks to you for that. And a happy new year to everybody as well, and we'll talk to you again in 2016 and get set. The next time we talk to you, it'll be 6 weeks until pitchers and catchers report. So that's the best news that anybody could possibly hear. Until then, happy new year, and we'll talk to you next week.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.